to the Not Old Better Show. I'm your host, Paul Vogelsang. And Happy New Year's, everyone. This is New Year's Day. It's also episode 70 plus and approximately the 6 month anniversary of the Not Old Better Show. I felt like doing something special to celebrate with you all, and since it's New Year's, it makes sense. It just so happened that my wedding anniversary is around this same time of year, so I asked a special guest to join me. My wife, Gretchen Vogelsang, is going to join me in just a second, and we are going to turn the microphones around and talk about some things, give you a nice nostalgic interview with Duke Fakir of the Four Tops, and answer some questions about what's next for the Not Old Better Show. And of course, we have to get right to the music. Of course, importantly, as you know my love of music, today's song is Reach Out and I'll Be There by the Four Tops. The co-founding member of the Four Tops, Duke Fakir, Abdul Duke Fakir, celebrated his 81st birthday, December 26, 2016. So 12/26/35 is his exact birthday. And in honor of Duke, in honor of Obie Benson, Lawrence Payton, and Levi Stubbs, and all their great Motown music, which is so much a part of our generation here on the Not Old Better Show, Reach Out and I'll Be There seems apropos. By the way, you'll find links to purchase this great music on the site, notoldbetter.com. Please know I'm not getting paid for any of this. I'm not an affiliate in any way. I just love this music. And now, for just a treat, in Duke's own words and voice, here's his take on the meeting with Levi Stubbs in high school, their first party gig performing together as a foursome, and writing music with Holland Dozier Holland, and creating the next hit following Reach Out and I'll Be There.
Exactly right. I've just enjoyed singing all my life. I sang in all the choirs in church and all the choirs in school as I grew up. Levi Stubbs, Rinaldo Obie Benson, and Lawrence Payton. We started it. Yeah. Levi and I were very popular because I was an athlete and everybody knew he could sing. But we always liked singing in a group. Now, there was a girls' club called the Scheherazades. They were giving a party, like a dance party. And the criteria to be in this girls' group was you had to be really, okay? So they were giving this party. So in the middle of the party, the little young lady said, "Hey, Lee, is that a quartet you got? You guys want to sing?" So he said, yeah. So he said, "Y'all just back me up." So he started singing a song we all knew. And we started backing them up, and our voices blended perfectly well. Wow. Just so happened that when we did sing, everybody knew Levi was the lead singer. I was singing first tenor, Lawrence was just started singing second tenor, and Obie Benson started singing baritone bass. And all the while, Motown was starting to grow. So Berry Gordy had seen us on a Tonight Show. We were working out of New York, so he had his A&R director, who knows us quite well, to get in touch with us. And at that time, we were thinking about how we could get in touch with Barry. So it really worked out. I mean, we rushed back to Detroit and sat down and made a deal. Whatever deal he offered us, we was going to take anyway. He just promised us hit records. He put us with Holland Dozier and Holland. They were great songwriters. You know, in fact, to be honest, I call them the greatest tailors of music in that day, because they would have, like, 1 week they'd have the Vandellas in there, and they would tailor make a number one or a top 10 hit for them. The next week they'd have the Supremes in, tailor make a song and production top 10 or number one. Then they would have the Four Tops in the next week. The next week they have Junior Walker. And they wrote these songs specifically while you're sitting there sometimes just for you, just for that. And when you walked out of there, you had a top 10 record. The same old song came about after Sugar Pie Honey Bunch, Can't Help Myself. Can't Help Myself was probably, it was one of our biggest hits. That had Reach Out. Well, it had been on the charts number one for 19 weeks. So when it fell from 1 to 5, Berry Gordy came in the studio and started screaming, "We got an anchor, it's number 5 with anchor. We don't have another record to follow." And we said, "Oh, you're right." But we told Holland Dozier and Holland, he says, "Look, this is Thursday. I got to have a record, and I got to have a record on the tops by Monday. So Lamont Dozier and I went out, and we, you know, had a few drinks. We was feeling quite good. And he was feeling just a little better than I, Lamont Dozier. So I said, look, man, I was driving tonight. I said, let me take you home. So I went to his house. He said, come on in for a minute. Let's have a nightcap. I said, okay, baby. So we had a nightcap, and we was talking. And as usual, he just went to his piano, and he started tinking around. He was playing Can't Help Myself. But then he started playing it backwards. Same chord, just playing. I said, you know, that sound like that same song that we just... He said, what'd you say? I said, it sound like that same song we just recorded, Can't Help Myself. He said, same song. He said, okay, Duke, I'm fine. I'll see you later. And I went home. The next day they called us to come to the studio, Friday. They had recorded a track called The Same Old Song, a rhythm track by the Funk Brothers. We sang the song. They mixed it. Sunday, they called us into the office to stamp label copies. Monday, it was on the air. And it was on the air. And we had a hit by Tuesday. Just like that. Just like that.
After reaching out and being there for me, I'm so grateful for Gretchen in all of this reinvention that I've done this year. When you're considering reinventing your professional brand or building your own new life, the process can be confusing and frustrating, and it's helpful to have someone close to you, someone who knows you, what you're capable of, and who's experienced in the subjects that you're interested in to help you navigate the journey. Well, as promised, I'm joined by Gretchen Vogelzang, my wife, and we've decided to turn the microphones around a little bit and talk about some things. But I thought it'd be fun for Gretchen and I to maybe answer some questions about how we're feeling about 2016 and maybe what's coming in 2017. So, Gretch, as always, you know, it's just a pleasure to have you here. What are you kind of thinking about 2016, and how are you feeling about the future?
Well, I mean, I think thanks for having me. First of all, it's always fun to be here with you. I 2016 is leaving me with a really kind of a bad taste in my mouth on a lot of different levels. I think, you know, it's been, you know, no secret what's been going on in our world. And you know, as I've watched the television shows that have the retrospectives of, you know, all of the people we lost this year and everything, there's so much emphasis on pop culture, you know, all of the movie stars that we lost and the authors and all that, which is very tragic and sad. Mm-hmm. But obviously there's a lot more time being spent on that than there is on some of the things that I think have been really very poignant and things that have been pivotal. I just feel this kind of shredding of the moral fiber of our world, and I think we need to really focus on what's really going on here. I mean, I see it in America, I see it in our communities, I see it in the world, and
you're really talking now about some of the war-torn refugee issues, maybe even some of the election-related things, maybe some of the division within our country.
I think there's a global divisiveness going on, and you know, when you look at the human beings, I mean, we're really very much, you know, pack animals, so to speak. I mean, we put ourselves into subcultures of you know, communities, and we identify with those subcultures. And America was founded upon fostering and nurturing people coming to this country from other countries and maintaining their identities as, you know, people from this country or that country, people from this religion or that religion. But what is happening is, and I kind of have felt this for a while, is I see people who are really kind of diving deeper into those identities and losing track of the fact that we're part of one big, you know, global community that is the human race.
And both your family history and my family history are really from immigrants. We come from immigrant stock, and And yet we've really tried hard to be part of the American culture and community. And it sounds like what you're saying is you see less of that going on, less of this kind of feeling of that we're all part of the same solution going forward.
Yeah, I mean, we live in a very diverse area. We have people from all over the world that live in our area just outside of Washington, D.C. And we've made it very easy for people to stay within their communities and their cultures. And I'm not by any means saying that people should completely lose those identities, but there is a bigger identity here. There's an identity of being an American citizen, but there's also an identity of being a citizen of the world and a citizen, a part of the human race. And
there's obligations that come with that too. And so you see some of those breaking down?
I definitely see some of those breaking down. I think, you know, we had a period of time where it was politically incorrect to face some of these divisions that we have. And now that gate seems to have opened. And we see some real, I am seeing some real ugliness going on. Not only what I'm seeing on TV, but I'm seeing it on the streets.
Firsthand.
And I'm just wondering how far we're gonna let this go before we get our collective grip on all of this and figure it out. I'm hoping that this is going to be a pivotal moment in our world culture.
And we'll come together and
we'll kind of figure it out. And I'm really hopeful that 2017 will kind of see the pendulum going the other way.
Yeah, I'm hopeful for that too.
But, you know, I also see things, and I think this is one of the things that's so hard is, you know, you see these things going on in the world that are just so horrific, and yet you feel so helpless.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
What can I do?
Yeah.
And I just wish that there was a clearer path to being able to help some of these situations. And I don't really know what that is. I mean, you ask five different people, what's the solution, or how can you do this, that, or the other, and you get five different answers, 10 different answers, 15 different answers.
Yeah, there's no question that the level of complexity has dramatically increased on every level, on every issue, on every form of assistance or communication, whether it's just trying to get word to another group about an event, or whether it's simply trying to communicate within your own community. It's really a challenge, and there are sometimes obstacles that stop you, but I don't know, I do feel like you do. The 2017's bound to be better, and it's worth working towards those things. Certainly simplifying is kind of one of my New Year's resolutions.
Well, yeah, definitely. But the problem is that we are faced with some problems that are just never going to be simple.
Mm-hmm.
And they're getting more complex. And if we don't come together collectively as a human race, we're going to back ourselves into some big corners here that we're never going to be able to get out of. When I think back to 2016 and I think about the things that really hit me the hardest, I think photograph of the young Syrian, I think he was probably a 2 or 3 year old little boy, who had drowned trying to escape Syria, and his body washed up on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
That just was gut-wrenching to me.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing some of the other children who have been so horrifically affected by some of these things that have been going on in the world, it's just not right for a child to have to grow up that way. And, you know,
some of the shootings that have gone on in our own country have been equally powerful on me. And seeing photographs, I remember seeing photographs of some of the shootings that were going on within Chicago and Missouri and other places where they were horrific to see children being exposed to some of this stuff. And I think that's hard to watch. That's just plain hard to watch.
It's hard to watch, but you know, this is our reality, and I guess is, you know, our children, our son at his high school, I mean, they have active shooter lockdown drills. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
At high school. How horrific is that for a child to understand the possibility of something like that?
And yet you talk to some of these kids. It's interesting because, for example, our high school age son, he, I think, has a perspective on some of this that is pretty optimistic. And he himself feels very service-minded and world-friendly and eager to assist on some of these levels. I think that's a big plus. I'm not patting myself. I mean, maybe I'm patting you on the back for a great job, you know, raising him, but I do think that those are positive things to look at, that our youth might be doing a better job at some of this than we did.
Maybe. Maybe they're just so desensitized to it that it doesn't strike them.
Yeah, maybe.
The way that it, I mean, because you and I remember a world where that didn't exist. They don't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's tragic.
Yeah.
It's very sad. I was talking to him last night. We were talking as a family when we went out for dinner for New Year's Eve. We were talking about, you know, the fact that you and I were free-range children, basically.
Right.
You know, our parents never knew where we were during the day. We were out playing.
I think that's such a funny way of putting
it,
too.
God knows where we were, you know. As long as we showed up at night at some point, mostly close to dark, our parents were fine with that, you know. And some of the things that we did were, you know, I would never let him do anything like that. And it's
right.
Not that we were doing anything wrong. We were just putting ourselves in situations that had the potential to be very dangerous. They weren't, thankfully. But
yeah. Today, they probably would have been, or maybe perceived as being much more dangerous, challenging, and potentially really kind of doing a disservice to the child. But then We I think maybe even my parents looked at it as kind of teaching some responsibility.
Well, I think, yeah, you learn how to bail yourself out of situations, you know. You learn how to work the problem. And we have generations of kids now who really don't know how to work the problem. And that creates a whole nother set of issues. Or their way to solve a problem is to Google it, you know.
Right.
Whereas our way of solving a problem was to really just figure it out on our own. That's a different, you know, skill set.
Right.
And so we don't really have, we have a generation of children, at least in the big cities, big metropolitan areas, that aren't facing that necessarily. I think if you grew up in rural America still, I think you have that, you know, possibility, but I don't know. It's just different, and I think the older we get, the more we understand how different and how much change there has been in the world, some for the good, some not for the good. And so, you know, every time we hit New Year's, it's like, okay, that was not good. Let's see if we can do a little better this time, you know?
So I mentioned my simplify resolution. Do you have some resolution? Do you have a resolution that you've made and want to share?
Well, I think for me, I would love to say simplify, but I know what 2017 looks like. So
right.
2017 is not going to be a simple year for us by any stretch. You know, right. We have an 18-year-old who is about to embark on some pretty big things. I'm in charge of a national dance festival in mm-hmm. Phoenix in May. I mean, mm-hmm. The first 7 months of this year are just going to be a blur. And I'm just really hopeful. I guess this is my biggest New Year's resolution, is that I can not drown in all of it, but stay on top of it and somewhat look organized while doing it.
Well, I just, you know, I'm right here by your side. You know, we're just this couple. We've stood the challenge. We've stood up to all of these challenges. And I think what I've watched you do over 2016 is, I think, been incredible. You've brought about the first nutcracker for your dance company. That, I mean, that was huge. And there's just a deeper love and connection that I feel. You baked a TV set in our oven.
Talk about Google. When your TV doesn't work for some odd reason and you Google it and it says, take the motherboard out and put it in the oven and bake it. And you're like, all right.
Yeah. So I hand it to you on every level. And we actually made that work. So.
I know. It was crazy. But, you know, Google's good for a bunch of stuff. But
Rennie was a big part of our lives in 2016.
Rennie is stuck with us for about 3 years now, which has been really, really cool. And Every winter, I take the patio furniture and I put a cover over it. And Rennie likes to live underneath the cover.
And these are our, we have our own, it seems, families, plural, of North Carolina Wren.
Carolina Wrens. Actually, we only have one family because Carolina Wrens are territorial. So if you have a pair of Carolina Wrens, that's your pair, and you can actually get to know them, and we feed him worms. And
you actually feed them by hand.
I do. It's gotten to be a very close and intimate relationship that I have with this bird.
We've talked about that on the show before, and we actually have a video of you, or actually of Rennie coming in the house.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Rennie did. That was a real highlight of 2016 when I opened the door and Rennie decided to come in the house.
To drop in.
Rennie flew around the house for a while and then decided to go back out. That was pretty fun. But, yeah, I mean, you know, it's there's so many things in the world that we can occupy our time with. I love observing wildlife.
Right.
I love being outside in nature. And
you love our dogs.
I love our dogs. And so, you know, I keep telling you I'm a cheap date because, you know, you give me a few waxworms and a place to feed Rennie, and I'm happy as a clam. I just think that's so much fun. But
And then we have several series of television shows that we've really glommed onto in 2016. We're hoping for big returns. We seem to love everything with Hugh Laurie in it.
Yeah, he's very talented. I mean, at one point at the beginning of the year, I and our youngest son binged on House, and that kind of started the whole ball rolling. But yeah, there's been some great, great shows.
Oh, Night Manager. I loved Night Manager. And then we're currently fixated on
Chance, which is a really wonderful show.
Yeah,
but there's been others. I mean, I like the historical fiction shows, like The Crown has been wonderful.
Yeah.
And you and I binged Downton Abbey. Finally, we were really late to that ball game, but
we did binge on the National Geographic Mars television program, and that was fascinating. I thought,
yeah, so, and that's something that's really come to the forefront, I think, in 2016 is the chatter about going to Mars.
Yeah.
And setting up a colony on Mars, that has really, really taken off. And with the passing of John Glenn this year, there was kind of a renewed interest in the space program and all that's going on there. And that is truly exciting. And our youngest son, I think he's like, I want to go into outer space, and that's really cool that he has that kind of excitement, you know, something like that.
Yeah, I do see that very optimistically as an economic powerhouse. I see space as an economic powerhouse in our future for young people. And I definitely want to say, too, that I personally am so grateful for all that you're doing, all that you've helped me with, Gretchen, on the show. We have 70-plus Not Old, Better shows done. And there's some great things coming in the future. And you're just a sweet partner, and I love you, and I'm glad we've got 2017 ahead for each other.
Yeah, me too. It's been fun, and I'm really proud of you. I think you have done a phenomenal job with this show, and there's nothing quite like reinventing yourself, you know, but you and I have both kind of done that.
Yep.
And and I think we're going to be much better off in the long run for doing this on our own and by ourselves and being the masters of our destiny.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining me today. We're going to end here with a couple of comments. I'm going to play one comment from a listener that actually Gretchen read to you. This particular listener commented on her viewing of our very first podcast, Eddie the Eagle, interviews, and this woman wrote in a lovely email, and I certainly want to, you know, reach out to all of you and say thanks, but thanks most of all to you, Gretch, for joining me today and joining me forever.
You're welcome, and Happy New Year to everybody, and now I have to get back to putting the Christmas decorations away.
Thanks Woo. For joining me. Love you.
Love you too.
Well, that's going to wrap up our show for today, but I thought I'd end with just an upbeat couple of New Year's-related facts for you, and this first one is a nod to NASA. I'm grateful for all of their help this year in producing some of the really cool shows that we've done, as well as the Smithsonian Associates. The Earth, of course, around New Year's, has a unique relationship with the moon. And further, every country typically celebrates New Year's in some way. Did you know that New Year's celebration dates back to 2000 BC in Mesopotamia? And January is named after Janus, the god with two faces, one looking forward and the other looking backward. Ancient Persians gave New Year's gifts of eggs, which symbolized productiveness. Most New Year's traditions are believed to ensure good luck for the coming year. Many parts of the United States observe the tradition by eating black-eyed peas on New Year's Day for good luck. So there's a couple of facts for you, and I'm not sure how you ever lived without them. But thanks again for tuning in on this show, as well as 70 of the past shows. Happy New Year's again to everyone. And I do thank you for tuning in and making it all worthwhile to produce. In my attempt to avoid, you know, navel-gazing about this past year, I do look forward to what's coming in 2017. And I want to focus on the characteristics such as empathy and humility and generosity, experience and encouragement that the Not Old Better Show has really come to be known for. And this notion that we're always heeding our mantra to talk about better from someone who's been there and is willing to talk about what they've learned and how to improve and do better. So to all my guests over this last year, including Gretchen, thanks for joining my guests and I in our efforts to make our world a better place. And to all of you out there that are doing your best to make a difference in the lives of your family, we celebrate your hard work and sacrifice with you. 2017, of course, will further our launch of new shows like grooming and gaming and food and travel. We have a new show called Business Build Out, and even a show on parenting. I really appreciate you sending me all your messages about how you're doing, including some ideas that you have for some of the new shows, reactions, comments. Please keep them coming in 2017. I want to have Gretchen read a comment that came from our very first show, the Eddie the Eagle interview, and a fan reaction to the program, which I think really sums up what the Not Old Better Show is all about. You can write comments on this blog or email me at info@notold-better.com. info@notold-better.com. Again, thanks. Everybody have a great 2017. Stay tuned for this wonderful comment, and we'll see you for episode 71 plus. Thanks, everybody.
I loved it. A good family movie. Dear friend, if you are on the verge of losing hope, or if you no longer believe in much, please, I sincerely request you to watch Eddie the Eagle. The reason I recommend this movie to you is because it was the same kind of hope and inspiration that kept me going after being kicked to the curb. The inspiration that comes from Eddie the Eagle is one of the most important you'll ever hear. In the movie, you see the pain on Eddie's face, both physical and emotional, as he crashes on the snow and in life, but he keeps moving forward despite everything. Although the movie plot is predictable and you may think that you know the story, give it a try. It will not disappoint you. It will help rekindle the lost hope in your heart. The movie ended with tears flowing down my cheeks. I will always be glad that my first review was for a movie named Eddie the Eagle. I hope the reviews and the ratings will be excellent. This movie is inspirational and spirit-lifting.